This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Welcome to it for your hump day, your Wednesday. Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Steve Simmons is with me. Having one of those nice summer days, Steve. Kind of, sort of, right? Yeah. It's warm.
Well, there was no sun today, though. Was there?
Yeah, but we're working off a real low bar here, pal.
You know what? I'm still going back to Sunday. How nice was Sunday?
I'm living off of the last Sunday of July. This is going to get me through the holiday season into 2018.
Well, if you think about it, because Sundays for a lot of people, that's the key weekend day. Especially, I work Saturday, so Sunday is my big day. And the weather all through June, all through July, every Sunday was complete garbage until last Sunday, where it was just perfect. It was hot. It was sunny. It was supreme.
Are you a cottage guy? Do you have a cottage?
No, I have a backyard.
Okay. So there's no family cottage or anything that?
Years ago, yeah. Not anymore.
Okay.
We're a backyard, pool, people hang around, barbecue family.
And you're a Florida in February guy.
Yes.
Right? Because you've got the place near Miami.
Yeah. But I'm a big backyard, summertime, hang by the pool. You know, put a burger on the queue.
You got the TV in the backyard, so you can catch it.
I've always wanted to do that. I haven't got to that stage. I like what I did on. It was funny. On Sunday was one of the great Jay's comebacks, right? So I'm outside. I'm listening to the game, and it got too hot. So I went in, you know, watched the last inning. The Jays are down a pile of runs. I'm snoring on the couch and barely getting along. And then all of a sudden, it's like close. And bases are loaded, and I'm awake, and Steve Pearce is like about to hit a walk-off grand slam.
For the second time in 4 days?
Yes. And he didn't get acknowledgement from player of the week or top five plays of the week. Did you see that?
It's lost in Toronto, though, Steve. It's like lost in a down season with the Blue Jays.
Sometimes you wonder, like, about this city as a North American sports entity. Like, the Raptors completely get ignored by the world. They can do anything, and people just don't notice.
Dwayne Casey was pissed about that on Vancouver's TSN radio station yesterday.
Really?
We'll play that audio for you.
Oh, that's good, because, you know, it's like, you know, when the whole thing happened in Cleveland, and who's it going to affect, and there's all kinds of ESPN charts and graphs and conversations.
Boston, Washington, Milwaukee.
Yeah, everybody. It's everybody but... So you can feel a little trampled on every once in a while. But here is, like, this is like one of the great weeks of all time by any player. Two walk-off grand slams by Steve Pearce, who doesn't have an interesting word to say about the two walk-off grand slams, by the way.
No.
Unfortunately. But that said, doesn't even get top five of the week. Like, come on, baseball. Where are we here?
Yeah. Well, that's pretty epic, too, because the Blue Jays, I think, had two walk-off grand slams in their first 40 seasons, and then you get one of these anomalies, right? 2 in 4 days by the same guy.
Well, they're just trying to be relevant. That's all.
Well, this is...
That's the Ross Atkins word,
this
right?
This is the path to contention for 2018,
yes.
Steve. Are you not... You're not drinking the Kool-Aid?
Well, I'm drinking some of the Kool-Aid. Part of the Kool-Aid I'm drinking is, I think with the pitching staff that you can take into next year...
If. And Stroman.
Okay, but who doesn't have ifs? Go through lineups. Everybody has ifs. I'm saying the pitching staff that you take with you right now, Stroman, Sanchez, Happ, 1, 2, 3, in whatever order you're going to put them. Back end, and if Biagini is in the starting point, then he's one of the starters. Back end, you've got Marco Estrada.
Roberto Osuna.
Yes, yep. One of those guys.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
I think Asuna's pretty good. I really like Tapera. I think Tapera's a major league pitcher of some quality. I think Barnes is a major league pitcher. I think they have enough guys that you can build a bullpen with. You know, they're going to add, like you always add, you know, two middle-range guys to that. I think that's a workable major league bullpen. I think that's a reasonable 3 of 5 starting rotation. And if you can figure out Biagini, maybe a fourth. So I don't look at that as if. I think that's okay. Now, the lineup.
Yes.
Lineup is a bit of a problem.
I'm just going to put my feet up here, Steve, and have you explain it to me. Because it is not clear to me
Okay.
how this is going to play out.
Corner outfielder.
Hey, I'll take you one step further.
Okay.
Center fielder.
You know what? That's a real interesting conversation now. Because
can't hit.
You take away the first month or so, and you can make the argument that he's not a good enough hitter to play every day in the big leagues, unless left field and right field are really good. And they're not really good now, which makes hit the fact that Kevin Pillar's not hitting more prominent. So here's the interesting thing. We've done a lot of talking about Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. When are we going to talk about the lack of performance from players? I mean, one thing, you know, they've put the players there, and they chose those players, and they, you know, and so we can criticize them for that. But I think there's an onus. Like Jose Bautista yesterday, from what I could understand reading Steve Buffery today in the Sun, you know, he went up and said, well, he didn't make any switch moves at the deadline, and he kind of harumphed the way Jose tends to harumph these things, like, we're not out of it. You know, of course they're out of it.
What?
Yes. but here they are. They've never been 500 one day of the season, and they've never not been last place one day of the season, but they're this close to being right back in it. The logic escapes me. That said, he's having a dreadful year. Nobody talks about him having a dreadful year. Donaldson, having a dreadful year. Nobody talks. He's made more. How many errors has Donaldson made? Like a ton.
He's into double digits.
Troy Tulowitzki, before he got hurt, had more errors this season than I believe in any other big league year. So other than Justin Smoke and Marcus Stroman and Osuna, who's having a good year?
Yeah. Well, I think you can make the argument that Justin Smoke is the only guy who has outperformed expectations, and his bar was set very low.
I think Stroman has. To me, he has.
Do you?
Yeah.
Because I think he's had a great year, but I think a lot of us felt that he could have a great year. So maybe he's exceeded them by a little bit, but certainly not to the degree that Smoke had.
No. But and Osuna, I think, has a little bit exceeded, despite the last week. I think he's had an exceptionally good season for a position that tends to be really difficult to do. But you take those guys away, it's bad year, bad year, bad year, worst season ever. Worst season for Donaldson, worst season for Tulowitzki, worst season for Bautista, worst season in the field for whomever is in left field at any time. Terrible offensive year for Kevin Pillar. Second base has been a disaster since, you know, Devin Travis went out, and he had a hard time at the beginning of the year. So.
Well, and Atkins on our program yesterday, Steve, was suggesting and dropped a hint, which has been floated out there before, that Travis could end up in the outfield at some point.
Well, he's a good enough hitter, I think, to play the outfield.
Well, I don't doubt that. I just wondered if you make that move with him, and presumably would be a left fielder, you got to track fly balls. So there might not be as much stop and start, as much contortion as you would get at second base. But I'm not entirely sure that a move to the outfield saves that knee. Just not clear to me. My concern with Travis is that the injuries he has suffered, and Ross quibbled with me on this. He thinks that to a large extent, what Travis has gone through is a bout of unluckiness, lack of luck. My fear is that 2 years ago, he injures his shoulder on that one-hopper hit by Brandon Moss in Cleveland, comes back a month, month and a half later, has to shut it down again a couple of weeks after that. They go in, they look around and realize, oh my goodness, two of his shoulder bones didn't fuse properly in his teenage years when he was growing. He's got an extra bone in there, so now he's got screws in his shoulder. He's now dealing for a second time with a knee surgery that's generally related to bone on bone. It's a cartilage issue. It's structural. It's skeletal. It's not I got my cleat caught. It's not I bumped my toe into the wall. This guy has structural skeletal issues that makes me wonder if his body will be able to hold up.
When I hear a general manager say he's had bad luck, you know who has bad luck? Guys who are injury prone. Guys like Joffrey Lupul, who are hurt all the time, every single year, different injury, gets hit with pucks in practice, this thing happens. It just happens. I love Devin Travis as a guy. He's one of my favorite guys in that clubhouse, if not my favorite guy.
It would
guy.
Be a good thing for the Blue Jays if a guy with his personality and his talent emerged as a leader.
Yeah,
but you got to stay healthy to do that.
You have to be healthy, and you have to perform. And I have no doubt about his ability to hit a baseball. I have great doubt about his ability to stay healthy. So whether that means being in left field or whether that means being at another position, maybe down the road, could he play third base? I don't know. Is that a position where there's less strain on your body? I don't know. you know, the smarter people than me would have to make a determination like that. But if he can stay, I'd love to see what he can do with 500 or 600 at bats.
It would be great.
Because it sure changes a lot of what this team is right now. And one of the things that they really have to get away from is, you look at the way that John Gibbons, I think, has almost had to play this lineup, with Batista leading off and Martin hitting second and Donaldson third, Batista four, and Morales five. That's four slow runners out of five guys. And Donaldson is not exactly Usain Bolt. So there's no speed at all. And then when you get into that 4-5 thing, or you get into Smoke and Morales, it's like, you know, you're into...
And Tulowitzki hitting six, yeah, doesn't move anymore. I know he's hurt and probably done
but
for
I'm
the
saying,
year.
But you're into slow, you know, it's like slow and slower. That has to change.
And Travis is that table setter at the top, too. I mean, he was the leadoff hitter on this team when he was going. He didn't have that traditional speed. But you would look at that lineup right now, Steve, and you would say Kevin Pillar, maybe Zeke Carrera, if he's playing every day, and he's in and out of the lineup depending on what they do in left field with Pierce and whatever. But on a day-to-day basis, Kevin Pillar, who's never on base, so it's not that relevant. It's relevant to his position in center field defensively, but it is not particularly relevant to the offense because you can't hit him high up in the order. They've tried that. It didn't work. He's the quickest guy. He's the fastest guy on the team, and you wouldn't even say that he... Not that I obsess over the stolen base, but not even he is the prototypical base stealer. He is the guy, though, that can go typically first to third on a base hit to right field. They don't have a lot of guys who can do that. They're a station-to-station team, more or less.
And it's so difficult to play that kind of baseball when you don't get enough hits, when you don't hit with runners in scoring position, when you don't do the kind of things, which is why, you know, when I began the conversation... We've all been jumping all over the GM, all over the president, all over the state of this team, all over ticket prices being raised, all over so many issues. But we don't, for whatever reason, Toronto does not get hard on its athletes. The city, we blame coaches, we blame GMs, we blame managers.
And we pick the weirdest ones, though, like Larry Murphy 20 years ago. Essentially got run out of town after a couple seasons, right? Goes and wins a few Stanley Cups in Detroit, ends his career on a high note. I think we sometimes nitpick on certain people.
But for the
most
part,
for some reason we decide. But
for the most part, we don't. This is not a city. This isn't Boston. We don't eat our young the way Boston can.
We didn't destroy David Price in 2 months the way that they have managed to systematically dismantle his mind in 18 months.
It's amazing how... The entire press corps and city has turned against David Price. It's like...
Well, he went after a Hall of Fame pitcher who is now a member of the media.
Yeah. By the way, most of Eckersley's great years were not in Boston.
Right.
So it's funny they're in love with this guy who really, you know, in Oakland and in Cleveland and in other places was at his best. He wasn't, you know, tremendous in Boston.
But that was as much about how Price handled the situation, right? I'm standing up in the middle of the plane. Eckersley's wandering through. I got 20 guys at my back who are going to give me a standing ovation or a little clap after I ream this guy out for saying, yikes, as a response to Eduardo Rodriguez's minor league rehab start stats.
There's an old expression that styles make fights. It's a boxing expression, but you can apply it to almost anything else. That a guy who can fit in perfectly in one place can't fit in perfectly somewhere else. A guy who's meant to be a Dodger can't necessarily be a Giant. And in this case, David Price was a star in Tampa, where, you know, expectations are low and media coverage is minimal. And he went to Detroit at exactly the right time, where media coverage is minimal and expectations historically have been reasonably low. And then he comes to Toronto and same thing.
He's a savior here.
He's a savior he pitches phenomenally well and he buys everybody robes and he's the guy. He's the guy. You still see Marco Estrada is still wearing his robe and some of the guys.
Some of those guys are still kicking around on those damn scooters. Yeah.
I would like to have taken one of those actually. I was considering it.
You should have asked somebody, Steve, because I think those players could afford to buy themselves another one if they gifted you one.
What's it? I almost got run over once downtown by Chris Colabello on one of those scooters.
Walking. Yeah, one of his big puffed up shoulders lean into you there, almost knock you over.
He just got signed, by the way. Did you see that?
He's back in Milwaukee. Yeah. Or not back in Milwaukee.
No, he's in the AAA version of Milwaukee.
Right.
Yeah, I hope. I like Chris Colabello. I hope he.
But he's a very approachable player.
Terrible what happened to him, or he did to himself, or however you want to look at it. But you look at what David Price was in really nice markets. And then he went to the market that ate up Ted Williams. Ted Williams, maybe the greatest hitter that ever played the game. And Boston and Ted Williams clashed for almost the whole time he was there. And you know, here's David Price, and now he's facing sort of the latest version of that.
But I want to spin this around to Marcus Stroman, Steve, because Stroman has, through his social media, branded himself as a me against the world guy. If you follow him on Instagram or Twitter, maybe you've been blocked. Have you been blocked?
Here's the weirdest part. I said nasty things about him after he blocked me, not before. Usually one leads to the other.
Yeah.
I would like to actually ask him, why did you block me?
Well, and he wouldn't have an answer to that because
he may not even know who I am.
Well, he's blocked almost everybody else in the media,
yeah,
too. So, but if you follow his Twitter or his Instagram, often you'll see, like in its response to the Tim Anderson situation in last night's game with the White Sox, lions do not concern themselves with the opinion of sheep. Doing what they said I couldn't. Height doesn't measure heart. Hashtag HDMH. And look, we live in a world now where social media is so prevalent that these athletes can get their message out directly to the consumer of that message, i.e., a significant portion of their fan base. It also can become a branding exercise. So you almost set yourself up as the anti-media guy or the anti-this or the anti-that, or I'm sticking it to the man, or whatever the case may be. So I'm interested in your thoughts on this notion now that part of this, I'm not saying so much with David Price and the Boston media, because that's a different situation, but there's almost a branding exercise here undertaken by some athletes. I would say Stroman falls into that category here in Toronto, to position oneself as the anti-media guy, or as the anti-they guy, whoever they are.
Well, in today's world, where most of the world, frankly, is anti-media, you know, the fact that you've chosen...
The President of the United States!
Yeah, the fact that you've chosen that tact, you know, will gain you popularity just for choosing that tact, because people say, look what he's doing to you. That's not... I have no problem with that from him. If he wants to do that, if the me against the world works for him, that's great. If it makes him pitch the way he's pitched this season, that's great too. But when you get into the squabbles he's gotten into of late, he got thrown out a few days ago in that bit of a mess that happened here. And then last night he got into a whole, you know, guffawful that seemed like really came out of nowhere.
Well, it was over the quick pitch thing, and that's a totally separate discussion. But Tim Anderson didn't like it, and so some hitters, Steve, are starting to respond to Stroman's quick pitching with stepping out of the batter's box, calling for time, trying to disrupt him. It's a cat and mouse gamesmanship game. But then Anderson's jawing at him, and so Stroman then starts screaming at him. Now, if you're going to take an affront to what Anderson had to say, Stroman's a guy who will glare and jaw at another dugout every other game.
Here's what I wonder about. That's going to play nicely in the short term. I think in the long term, it's probably going to explode for him. Not just on the field, but I wonder in his own clubhouse how people will look at him, how he will be viewed. You get a guy, I'll use...
He's already lost friends, Steve.
I'll look at Russell Martin as an example. Russell Martin is as old school baseball probably as you'll get. Would you agree with that?
I would say that's a fair, yeah.
I would suspect that Russell Martin, being old school baseball, would not like, he may not ever say this, but he would not like Marcus Stroman's histrionics. He would like him to calm down. He would like him to just go there, do your job. Now, somebody told me this, and by somebody I mean somebody in the Blue Jays family, told me that when Burley left the Jays...
Papa Burley.
He lost his voice of reason. And Stroman lost that guy who would say, you know what, Marcus, you went a bit too far today. Dial it back a little. We know you have talent. Enjoy your talent. Live off your talent. You don't have to be an a-hole or whatever you want to be on the field every single day. There's no need to do that. And baseball doesn't appreciate that maybe the way a football would, for example. Football likes that defensive back who's in somebody's face all the time. Baseball is a different kind of sport that way, and there's a decorum to it to a point, and there's clubhouse play to a point. And yeah, he has lost friends in the clubhouse over a variety of different things, but that shouldn't matter, because again, he's doing his job. I just wonder long term if that behavior won't blow up in his face.
You absolutely have a legitimate point there, and I've with no insight other than opinion. I wonder how long it is, Steve, before he starts to get really expensive, because he's already in. He was a Super 2 guy, so he's got 4 arbitration eligible years. He's on his first year of arbitration. He's making $3-some million. He's had a great year this year. We wouldn't take that away from him. So he's going to be doubly expensive or more next year. Then you get into the year after that. I wonder if at some point he isn't a very tradable asset for a team that is looking to remain young and controllable in certain spots as he nears free agency. Because you wouldn't mind getting that personality out of there.
But if he's able to pitch 200 innings and get you a 3.3 ERA over the course of a season or something like that, then he's extremely valuable in that role. I worry more about how it affects other people. I'll use John Gibbons as an example. Because John Gibbons, you know, people don't always talk about where he fits in and what he does and how he manages his team. But if you were to ask him who were his all-time favorite players he's ever managed, write it down, a really short list. If there's a top five, Mark Burley would be in the top five, in my view.
They still text weekly.
Well, he was texting him at the end of last season, considering a comeback, question mark.
Yeah. And Burley responds by texting him pictures of the lake that he's on, yeah. Inevitably. Yeah.
So this is one of his favorite guys. Mark Burley had two things that he always talked about. Be a professional and be nice to people. And he lived by that code as a ball player. And he had a remarkable career for the ability he had. He overachieved, I would say. And he did carry through. For what I could see, he performed to the highest level he could perform for most of his career. And he was a decent person to be around, anyhow, from my perspective, mm-hmm. for most of his career. And when he left, I think Stroman took a turn in the wrong direction.
Yeah. I'm okay with a guy being how he's going to be. But that doesn't mean that everybody else has to like it. Okay, so if Marcus Stroman wants to be that way, and somebody goes on Twitter and says, I wish he wouldn't be that way quite so much, and then others say, oh, he's just being himself, let him be him. No. If you're going to be that way, there are going to be others who have countering opinions to that. We see it all the time. He pissed off Albert Pujols and the LA Angels in April, staring into their dugout. And I said, I don't think the Angels were objecting so much to the act itself, because if it was a one-off by somebody who didn't have that reputation, they probably would have ignored it. They were reacting to the guy who did it because he has developed a reputation for doing that.
In my career, I have tried to be as honest and as outspoken as I can be in doing my job, both written and broadcast. And so when you do it that way, you are going to rub people the wrong way. They're going to have different opinions than you have. They're going to call you names. I can't react to that. And people say, well, why don't you jump back at people? I can't react to it, because if I'm going to be out there calling people out, then they're allowed to call me out, so long as it's done in a reasonable fashion of sort. You know, when you get into swearing and the rest of things, name calling, you know, I'll pull plugs on things. But I think it's the same with Stroman. You know, if you're going to be that way, expect that people are going to react the way they're going to react to you. And he's kind of got all of that Jose Bautista bottled up in him, don't you think? There's a little of that.
And he will tell you, Bautista's one of the guys he's looked up to since day one, since he joined the big league team.
And it works tremendously well when you can hit the home run and flip the bat. When you're hitting .217... and you're striking out, you know, historical numbers, doesn't look so good.
No. All right, coming up on the other side, we'll get into some of the CFL talk. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi is going to join us at 5 o'clock. This is bold stuff here from the brand new commish. If you look at Randy Ambrosi's brief tenure so far, he's had two fires to put out. The Karen fire, you know, the near million-dollar winner. And this stuff with coaches' challenges. There is an in-season, about a third of the way through, an in-season change to the rules. Steve and I will talk about that on the other side. Randy will join us at 5 o'clock. And there's some news out of the National Hockey League, the Buffalo Sabres, that we'll pass along as well. We'll get to it next. Overdrive, Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons. Stay with us. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Hey, Zodog and Noodles are gearing up for the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament. It's Saturday, September 23rd at Woodbine Racetrack. Visit tsn1050.ca to make a donation on behalf of Team Overdrive. For every $20, you'll be entered to win roster spots on the team for you and a friend. All proceeds go to the Princess Margaret Cancer Center.
Have you ever been in this tournament?
I have not.
It is one of the great days of Toronto, of the year. It's just a fabulous event. What they do is they take over the parking lot at Woodbine, and they use fences, and they turn it into about 30 ball hockey courts. And the way you get in is your group raises X amount of money for cancer. And you get everybody gets an ex-NHL player or a celebrity of some kind or a media person or somebody, depending on how much money you raise. So the guy who raises the most money gets like first pick and whoever they decide to take in that thing, and they get him. And it goes from there. And the games are half an hour each. You play five games in a day. You get and the food there is free. The drinks there are free. There's massage going on.
Oh.
The people who run this thing, Kevin Shea and the people from Princess Margaret, it's a spectacular day. And then you hear some of the stories of everybody's there because everyone's had a personal experience of some kind with cancer, be it family, be it friend, be it somebody you know. And so there's so many stories shared. It's to me, there's also Baycrest does the same thing on ice around April or May every year. Those two events, and they're kind of based on the same thing. They raise about $2 million in a day for cancer. And I just love going.
How many, you've been on a team bunch of times?
I've been on a team. I've been one of the guys they add on as a supposed celebrity. Can you imagine being disappointed? Like some guys are getting Paul Coffey and then somebody gets me. Like
a guy who wrote a column about Paul Coffey.
Yeah, many columns, yeah. Actually. But that's what you find. And you walk around, they have Johnny Bauer signing autographs and the old Maple Leafs. And you'll find people like Bruni Surin there. And just,
wow.
It really brings in a great collection of Canadian athletes and former athletes and guys and lots of media people.
Good competition, too. Like, do some people get into it?
Take it seriously, but it's like 4-on-4 inside of a court. I'll tell you one thing. It's exhausting. If you don't have three lines, like, you might as well just get water and sit on the side because you can't do it.
Well, how are Hayes Noodles and the O-Dog going to fare then? Because it was a struggle to get to 10K for those guys.
They're going to need three lines minimum on that team. I don't care how good they are. Just you die after. You know, when you're into your fourth game of the day, you're sagging pretty good.
Yeah. Coming up on the other side, Steve and I will get into the rule changes in the CFL coming in the middle. Well, not quite the middle, but a third of the way into the season. And Commissioner Randy Ambrosi will join us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. A bunch of other talk to get to as well. At some point, we'll discuss the Olympics. It looks like Paris 2024, L.A., 2028, but how this all played out, a little different from what we're used to. It's all ahead. Stay with us. Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons, Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. Another installment of TSN 1050 Sound Wars coming up at about 4:50. Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons on Overdrive. This is TSN 1050. You're streaming us on the TSN Go app. Should remind you as well, CFL commish Randy Ambrosi along at 5 o'clock. We've got more baseball talk before the night is out. Steve Phillips, TSN Blue Jays analyst, will be with us at 6. But I'll say this for commish Randy Ambrosi. Steve, he's been on the job now, what, a month?
A little more than that.
A little more than a month? I've heard more about proactivity and Randy Ambrosi in the 4, 5, 6 weeks he's been on the job than I heard from Jeffrey Orr during his tenure as CFL commissioner.
You can actually go back to Mark Cohan and say, where did he impact seasons? He didn't really.
You mean on the field?
Yeah.
This is something today. This is one of those things where in other sports, Steve, I don't think you'd have to get the PA involved necessarily and whatnot, but you'd get your general managers together, you'd get the board of governors together, and they would meet and they would discuss these rule changes and rubber stamp. This is Randy Ambrosi coming in effectively week 6, week 7 of the CFL season and saying, the coach's challenge, the 2 you get and the 3rd you get if you get your first 2 right for a potential maximum of 6 in a game, it's taking up too much time. Games are losing their flow. We need to fix this. One per team now.
Well, what he's been, he's been going park to park and city to city and market to market. And I noticed him last week at the Argo game. He was out in the area where the fans were tailgating. And he's out there talking to the people who are buying tickets. And it's interesting, although, you know, people will say, never listen to the paying customer, so to speak, the old Marv Levy line. You know, soon, if you listen to them, you're going to be sitting with them soon. But I think he's been hearing in every place, there's too many challenges. It's too liberal. The rules are need to be streamlined. The games are too long. Got to shorten this up. The challenges are too many. And I think he's heard it over and over and over again from fans, from media, from even from some players, I think. And so now, instead of doing the NHL thing, which would be to wait to the end of the season and then have your general managers meet and then have your governors meet and then at the end of the day maybe decide nothing or possibly decide something, he said, you know what? I'm going to put my stamp on this right now. I'm going to make a significant change. You may not like the change. You may not agree with the change, but it is, it's a strong move on his part to make it at this time in a season.
Yeah, and I know you've had conversations with Hazy on this program. He wants to go back. He wants to retrograde this baby back to the 80s, right? If we could scrap review in all sports, he'd be all for that. I'm not that far, but I do, Steve, have hesitation when it comes to objectivity versus subjectivity. So using the NFL, for example, because they've got all their stupid football process rules related to the catch and all that. A guy sees something, and a sideline official sees something on a tight catch, a tight play right on the sidelines, and he calls it a catch. And then there's a challenge. Did the knee get down before he went out of bounds? Did both feet come down before the receiver was out of bounds such that it would be a catch? That's a very objective thing that a coach can throw a challenge and you review it, and he either did or he didn't. So the catch stands or it doesn't. Here in the CFL with the pass interference, I don't necessarily mind the boldness with which they pursued this, but pass interference is a subjective call on the field, and if it's challenged, and I'm bringing up pass interference because this is at the heart of the issue. The coaches are essentially saving their challenges for pass interference. And I think subconsciously, the referees are counting on the coaches using those challenges one way or the other, whether it's called or not. So if you challenge a subjective call on the field and transfer the decision-making power to somebody else who's looking at the replay and making a subjective decision himself, it's subjectivity on top of subjectivity. I'm okay with the objectivity on subjectivity, but doubling down on subjectivity ain't good for me.
Well, here's what I'd like
to see. That makes any sense.
Yes, it does. What I'd like to see is if I fumbled the football and it ends up in somebody else's hands and they don't have the call right, I want to see that call corrected. But on pass interference, where an official who you have hired is staring at the play and he throws a flag and he sees interference, and then you go to replay and somebody in Toronto watching 9 replays is telling you that it's not, I have problems with that. And that's where, you know, subjectivity comes in. I think you should only be able to challenge on absolutes. Catch or no catch. Fumble, no fumble.
Inbounds, out of bounds.
At the last Argo game I was at, one of the challenges was somebody blocking downfield on a passing play. That's not what the rule was about when they put it in. Now, what I like is that he's really streamlined here. It's one call a game, which means you're going to have to pick your spot really well if you're a coach. You're not going to waste it early in a game. You're going to wait till later on probably to use your objection if you use it at all. And you're going to worry about using it because what happens if something, you know, more important happens afterwards that you can't challenge on? And so he's really, I would like to have seen one in the first half, one in the second half, and set it up that way, and no additional plays on top of that. But I agree with you. I would remove all of the elements of subjectivity out of the call so that, you know, so that let the officials do their jobs. If they're going to make mistakes, replace them.
Yeah. The notion of the infallibility of technology is fine, but if, to use your example, Steve, if a downfield official misses an illegal block or an illegal man downfield, well, isn't that an official screwing up on a particular play in the same way that a receiver once or twice a season will drop a pass when there's 5 yards between him and the nearest defender, the nearest defensive back, and he would have been clear for a touchdown, but he drops the pass? There is human error everywhere.
So we as the public, we will allow a receiver to drop a pass. We will allow a blocker to miss his block. A tackler not to make a tackle, a quarterback to overthrow an open receiver. We will accept that's part of the game. For whatever reason, with television being what it is right now, we won't accept the official for missing something that happened right in front of him or a pass interference that maybe should have been. And a lot of this came from a few years ago. Montreal played Hamilton in a playoff game, and Daron Carter was basically tackled before he got a pass that should have probably been a touchdown for him. If he can make the catch he made last week, he can make the easy ones too. So they looked at that. Montreal lost the game. No call was made. There was nothing to challenge. And they lost it. They were eliminated from the playoffs, essentially, on a blown call. In the same year or either the year after, I think, because they put the... No, it was the year after. They put the rule in. The Grey Cup is then won on a pass interference miss by an official, according to the way it turned out. They challenged the play. Edmonton challenged it. They called pass interference. Bang. They win the Grey Cup. On a, you know, and I had an American friend, you know, Ray Ratto from...
No, CSN Bay Area,
yeah,
baby.
One of
my favorites.
One of the funny people on Twitter. Ray Ratto was covering that Grey Cup. He wanted to do a piece that week on the difference between...
Because San Francisco or Santa Clara was hosting the Super Bowl.
So difference is Super Bowl week and Grey Cup week, and he did some wonderful work on that. But when that was called at the end, he says, now my week is made. Like, this would never happen in the NFL, and now I've seen it all, and we had all seen it all by then.
All right, coming up, we've got Randy Ambrosi, the commissioner of the CFL. He'll join us at the top of the hour. TSN 1050 Sound Wars on the other side, and a brief shot, some potential developing news out of Buffalo in the NHL. Think you might be able to guess the player tied into the news. Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons, Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app.
It's time for a TSN 1050 sound war.
Wow, what a hit that was!
This is the worst one for sure.
Right, it's 4:48. You're listening to Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons, TSN 1050. And the TSN Go app. So it's time for TSN 1050's Sound Wars, our ongoing bracket challenge. First, before we get to the next bracket challenge, we've got to get to the winner from today's Sound War battle between Matthews' fourth goal and Kessel versus Beagle. Here's the winner.
Here's Matthews with Nylander, 2-on-1. Back to Matthews. He scores! Austin Matthews, 4 goals. Do you believe this? Holy mackerel, the kid's on fire.
4 on the way to 40, and Austin's fourth goal on opening night last October garnered 72% of the vote. Kessel versus Beagle coming in way behind at 28%. So Austin's 4 goals moves on. And now it's time for the best on-air moments to continue going head-to-head. This gives you the opportunity to decide which one will survive this TSN 1050 Sound War. It's brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. It's on-air moment, seed number 5 versus seed number 12. On-air moment, seed 5 is a fictitious phone message left by Overdrive's commissioner, Jerry Bettman, for Snoop Dogg after his performance at the NHL All-Star Game.
You know who's back up in this mother...
Snoop, it's Jerry. G-E-R-R-Y. Thanks for ruining the f***ing weekend at the All-Star Game. All I heard was f*** this and f*** that. It's Jerry. Call me.
That's going to be a tough one to beat, at least in this round, but we'll see. On-air moment number 12, seed 12, Leafs general manager Lou Lamoriello telling Overdrive what O-Dog's strongest personality trait is.
Lou, if you could have had him for free, would you have taken Jeff O'Neill in his prime?
Actually, Jeff knows that there was a time during his career that I tried to get him, and he's just maybe too humble, which maybe that'll surprise you.
I'm sure Lou didn't want to give up 7 first-round picks for me.
Like I said, he's humble.
So you know what? That's a pretty good one. This is going to be a good showdown here.
You know, one of the things people don't realize, Lou Lamoriello is a funny man. If you spend any time around him, he comes across publicly as sort of this curmudgeon-y figure.
And a bit of a godfather type, too.
Yeah, but he's actually, he's got a great sense of humor, and he's fun to talk to about a lot of different things.
Well, maybe he pulls through for seed number 12. I like the Jerry one with Snoop Dogg, but this is going to be a tight vote.
This is a tough one. And, you know, some of the ones I've heard are kind of one-sided.
This,
you could see either side going through here.
Right, either side going through. And in fact, whichever side goes through may be an even bigger favorite in the next round. We'll see how it plays out. Go to tsn1050.ca right now. Click on Sound Wars, and you can vote for your favorite on-air moment. Seed 5, Snoop, it's Jerry. Or seed number 12, Lou says O-Dog is humble. Voting for this Sound War will close tomorrow morning at 8. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050. Sound Wars is brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager at select Loblaws grocery stores.
Could you ever believe that Jeff O'Neill, who hated media, by the way, when he played in the NHL, not only has become media, but is doing impressions of commissioners on media?
Yeah, I still laugh at that draft day thing from late June, Steve, where I guess he'd written it out to a Noodles or Hayes that there was an impending gastrointestinal requirement that he was suffering through, and he, you know how he would write it out, I have to you know what, and I guess that note was right in front of Gary's face that the entire time that Bettman was guesting on the program. I wonder how much Gary knows about Jerry.
I think Gary knows about everything.
Yeah,
he's got people who tell him, you know, he may not like it knowing him, but I think it's pretty darn funny, myself. And especially who's doing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, former player, former 40-goal scorer, who, as he said to me on a number of occasions, he couldn't stand us when he was playing. Like, he hated the media.
No, no question. And, I mean, some guys... And O-Dog's a guy, he's just natural, doesn't care. He'll tell you what he thinks. It plays, man.
And funny.
And funny as all hell. We got some news out of Buffalo. I don't know if it's news. It's a developing story. The Associated Press is reporting that the Sabres and Jack Eichel are in the process of discussing an 8-year contract extension. So there are no dollar figures, Steve, to this story at this juncture. But it sounds as though the two sides are at the very least getting closer.
So if they're going 8 years now, what do you think is 8 a year, 7 a year? Like, we saw what Ryan Johansson just signed for. I think I would put Eichel similar at this stage.
Does this surprise you that Eichel would want to go 8 years in this regard?
Depends what the dollars are, I guess.
If you take the $7 or $8 million figure that you just threw out there, there is a chance that Eichel, I would say maybe even a better than 50-50 chance, Eichel could end up well outperforming that contract.
Yeah, some guys want the term. Therefore, they'll settle for a little bit less. These days, it seems like people are getting the term and high dollars. So until we see the numbers, if he signs at 7 for 8 years, he may be signing light.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. We'll touch on it a little bit more in the next hour. A couple guests as well. Wayne Drays, ESPN The Magazine, will join us. He was the man behind the 30 for 30 Steve Bartman feature on ESPN 6 years ago. Well, Bartman's got a World Series ring from the Chicago Cubs. We're going to catch up on this great human interest story. CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi will be our guest next on a day when he makes a relatively significant rule change in the middle of the season. Stay with us. Overdrive hour number two starts in a moment. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app.